Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for The Performance Difference. The Performance Difference, featuring leading executives and HR professionals, focusing on recruiting, retaining, and improving employees. Now here's your host, Lori Genevieve.
Well, good morning, everyone, and hope your week is starting off a great week. I know it's happy Martin Luther King Day today, as many are observing. Of course, an exciting day with the inauguration, too, as well. And I'm pleased to announce I have Jenny Schmidt back as a guest host. Hey, Jenny.
Hi, Lori. Great to be here again. Thank you.
And how was your, I haven't seen you really since holidays. How was your holidays?
Oh, my gosh. I was suffering from that cold that's been going around. So my holidays were a bit of a blur. I hope yours were better than that.
Yeah, I would say they're a little bit, a little bit better than that. Okay, well, great. Well, Jenny, you have brought two fantastic ladies to talk with today, and I'll let you do the honors in introducing them.
That is the exact right first sentence to use to introduce these two women, one of whom I've had the privilege of knowing and working with for about 10 years, and another that I'm building a working and personal relationship with, and I look forward to introducing them both to you. So, first of all, I'm going to say a little bit about each one of them and then have them fill in some more details about their background.
Great.
And first, I'd like to introduce Deb Page, who is a longtime friend and colleague of mine. She is a certified performance technologist, which is a certification given from the International Society of Performance Improvement. So, definitely an appropriate guest for our show, as is our other guest, Judy. I've known her for over 10 years, and we were colleagues as independent consultants together first, and then she recruited me to work at the Georgia Leadership Institute for School Improvement, and we worked there she was the executive director, and we worked there together for about another 8 years.
Great.
And now we're still working together on this new project that she's going to tell us about, she and Judy. So, Deb, welcome, and if there's anything else we need to know about you, please let us know.
Oh, well, thank you, Jenny. It's always a pleasure to work with you. My background started, the way I ended up with the Georgia Leadership Institute for School Improvement was really sort of by a fluke. I was one of Georgia's teaching statistics. I was a 3 years and out kind of career as a high school English teacher here in the Atlanta area. And I spent the next 20 years working in human resources and human capital development and training and that type of thing. And most of that time spent in subsidiaries of Citigroup. And in I left Citi in 2001 and was working independently. That's when you and I were doing some work together, and got a call and was recruited to start up this new initiative here in Georgia, the Georgia Leadership Institute for School Improvement, which was to give principals and superintendents and other people who were leading and facilitating school improvement the opportunity to have the same types of training experiences and developmental experiences and performance solutions that executives do in other businesses. And so,
oh, fantastic.
We're funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, about $15 million in funding from various sources, and built the curriculums, did the training. Jenny was instrumental in helping us do the performance-based instructional design. And we've worked in probably 170 of 182 school districts in Georgia. And
wow.
Have some really good, strong turnaround stories. And then I had known Judy through some work she had done with helping our consultants within the Institute with their performance, and particularly looking at how do we sustain initiatives that we've trained people to do and have successful fidelity of implementation. And so we got together on this idea of certifications, because Judy will tell you about how she has helped International Society for Performance Improvement build their human performance technologist certification. And as I was pursuing that certification, I talked to her about the possibility of us doing this for people who do specifically school improvement, mm-hmm. performance improvement. And so that's when we decided that we would jump in together and build those certifications. And so that's what brings us to the show today, of how we began to launch the Institute from there. So, Jenny, that's sort of a brief history of how we got together and what we've been working on.
Very good. So before we get into those stories at more depth, let me make sure to introduce our other illustrious guest. Now, Deb is a Georgia native, but we have Judy Hale, who's with us from Chicago today. And those of you out there listening, like Lori and myself, who are professionals in the field, Judy Hale may need no introduction, but I'll go over it just as a matter of formality. Judy has been working as Hale and Associates for quite a number of years. She's the most recent past president of ISPI and did some great things at that organization. You also may be familiar with her name because she's written numerous books and done very many workshops and presentations at organizations like ISPI and other professional organizations in our field. She's, as Deb mentioned, she's an expert in building certifications that are valid and also in helping organizations sustain important changes and improvements that they have made. And that's how we got to know her through GLISI. And Judy, thank you so much for being here today. I look forward to hearing more about you and what you and Deb are doing together.
Well, thank you, Jenny. It's a real pleasure being here. And I was going to say, I'm really awed by Deb's particular experience and background. That's great. I'm that industry side. I'm the non-school side. Mm-hmm. And my experience in 30-plus years has been working with corporations across all industry sectors. So it's whether they be high tech or healthcare or finance or manufacturing or whatever. And most of my work with them is saying, how do we make sure that our suppliers are proficient? How do we make sure our supply chain is sufficient? How do we make sure our aftermarket partners, you know them as dealers and distributors, and how do we get our employees? And some of them even talk to me about qualifying their customers. So if you're going to sell a very sophisticated product, you want your customers knowledgeable in how to use that. Otherwise, your service calls go up. They become an expensive customer.
So actually certifying customers? Or is
yes.
That, wow.
They actually, yes. So they certify, from beginning to end, the people mm-hmm. who supply parts, the people who build parts, the people who sell parts, and the people who maintain them after they're in the marketplace, and the people who buy them. So my background mostly is in that effort. And in terms of the sustainability, I had one corporate executive say to me, he said, we've spent $35 million last year on initiatives to improve performance, and you can't smell them anywhere today. So that's unfortunately a story that many corporations find. They spend lots of money, mm-hmm. as do school systems. They spend lots of money to make things different, but they don't think through how they're going to sustain it, because it comes down to changing habits, changing new behaviors. And you can think of it as like analogous, we just had the New Year's, analogous to New Year's resolutions. Mm-hmm. Everyone's mm-hmm. going to join, you know, the physical fitness yeah. place. Everyone's going to eat differently. And that lasts probably 2 weeks.
Organizations are made up of people, right? And if people
exactly
struggle
right.
that much with change, it stands to reason that organizations do.
Absolutely.
Well, Deb alluded to how the two of you got together, and I recall it was when we were at GLISI. Number one, we wanted to turn our a part of our staff into performance consultants, and that was a new field for them, so Judy helped with that. And also we wanted to make sure the changes were going to stick, so we brought Judy in for the sustainability. So, Deb, you were about to tell a story about how you two got together and started this new organization that we're going to talk about today, which is the Institute for Performance Improvement, or TIFPI.
Well, as we were working with the Georgia Leadership Institute, as I mentioned earlier, we had about $15 million in funding over about an 8 or 9 year period. And when you have that type of funding, those who invest in your work expect you to be good stewards of that work. And so that's why we were looking at this issue of sustainability. And one of our funders was the Wallace Foundation in New York, which is the Reader's Digest Family Foundation, which deeply invests in education and change, and particularly had focused on leadership and had funded our work. And one of the things that they did for us as grantees is bring us in and get us to think about how do you make your initiative sustainable over time, because you're not only trying to sustain what your clients or those you've helped have done, but one of the challenges that funding foundations have is that if they fund an organization, they don't want to fund a startup forever or any other type of organization forever. And it's particularly in tough economic times like this, where you've had many, many foundations that have their corpus of their investments is shrinking. Some of them really in the Madoff scandal, a lot of New York foundations really took a hit. And so that funding pie was getting smaller at the same time that these organizations have made a lot of investments in the initiatives that they sort of bet on, if you will. And so they brought us together and had people from SCORE come in. It's an organization funded by retired executives and business people that really look at how do you take an organization and make it sustainable over time, especially when you've been getting state funding or federal funding or grant funding. And so one of the things that as they coached us and we thought about the work, one of the things that I could see coming is that our organization had to be able to take in revenue and be able to take product that we built, take in revenue, but at the same time be able to take grants. Well, as we were, the position that we sat in did not allow us to do both of those things easily. And so that's where I started to go into sort of R&D mode. And I said, you know, if we're going to have new initiatives that will bring in money, we need to find out a way that we can do that. And so as Judy and I talked about coming together and collaborating, we hit on the idea, well, maybe we need to formalize this into an organization, but we needed to solve that same problem of how are you sustainable over time, how do you both attract grants and make revenue. And so Judy told us about in talking to our intellectual property attorneys, about a new type of organization that's called an L3C. And Judy, you want to talk to them about the L3C and how it is really a great instrument for organizations that are trying to do social entrepreneurial work that benefits the common good, that that you are devoted to a mission for common good like education in the workplace, but it gives you the a different type of flexibility. If Judy, if you want to tell us about that.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say it was actually started by the fine state of Illinois. Sorry about that. So, and it came about because of an interest in finding a way to attract entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. and encourage them to get involved in social efforts, social missions.
Okay.
And currently, so most entrepreneurs go into what is called a limited liability corporation, an LLC.
Right.
Most of them have that. And but that doesn't. And then we have the 501c3, which is the federal group, which is a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is they said, why can't we put those two together? Now, what it means is that you have to have a social mission, which we do, but it allows you then on the LLC side mm-hmm. to actually offer products and services and generate profit. And you must show that some of that profit must go back into supporting your social mission.
Okay.
So it's not just grants coming in. You actually have to show that through what you're doing, you're funneling some money, some efforts back into that social particular mission. It is, you know, for tax purposes, we file as an LLC. they see it as a partnership, but we also have to show where that money is going. Now, what's interesting is this is new for the state.
Mm-hmm.
It's new for the banks. It's new for us. So going to open a banking account was kind of an interesting experience.
Mm, I bet.
I mean, they had to go on. They looked at me funny, and they said, let's look it up. And they said, oh, goodness, we already have it. And but they had never done one before. They had never set it up. So it's all brand new. And when I meet with my accountant, who's a CPA and a tax attorney, she said the same thing. She said, I have to look that up. I've never done that before. So I think it's a learning vehicle for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But it did meet our needs. We wanted to be able to pursue grants. We wanted to be able to drive forth on a larger mission, which happens right now to be school improvement. We're also incorporating workforce issues, aligning education to support workforce readiness.
Oh, okay.
And then, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you continue, Judy.
No, I was just saying that, so it's that's maybe telling you more about that particular process than we have. But that allowed Deb and I to do two things. It allowed us to maintain our individual, so she can still do work under Willing Learner,
mm-hmm.
I can still do work under Hale Associates, and we can do work under the Institute for Performance Improvement.
How fascinating. I'm glad you, because I would have asked the question anyway, so I'm glad you explained it.
So, Lori, let me take a minute to explain that TIFPI is located in Chicago for the reasons Judy described. Their state has this new type of organization structure. Georgia does not have it yet, but there is legislation working its way through the process. So I guess I don't know if it'll be called an L3C, or it will be called that as well. So if people in Georgia who are listening are interested to know when they can do that, hopefully it'll be soon. And if you're very interested, contact your legislators and help make sure that that opportunity comes through for all of us. So let me take a stab at describing TIFP's mission and how you're going to go about doing work, and then have you guys elaborate on it. So from what I understand from your descriptions, it's sort of a two sides of a coin. On the one side, we're going to be doing work with corporations and industry, and that will be work for hire. So that's a way to generate income for the organization. On the other side, we'll also be doing similar work. All of this is related to performance improvement strategies for school districts. I think some of that will generate revenue, but sometimes you'll also use grants to fund that work or profits from the industry side, correct?
Yes, but on the industry side, I want to point out that we're looking at workforce development. We're looking at, they are saying, you know, we want to hire people, and they are lacking core skills. Well, that runs us right back to education, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
So the work we're doing with on the industry side still has a tie to what I call workforce readiness, mm-hmm. making sure your systems really are producing a workforce that you can use. Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
And, Lori, I want to say that I'm actually very proud to say that I'm one of the inaugural members of TIFP.
Woohoo!
Yes, I'm so happy to be part of this group. And so I've met the core group several times, both on the educator side and on the industry side. And I can tell you that many of them have kids in school,
right,
like you do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very passionate about whatever TIFP can do to support schools doing a better job preparing their kids so that they are workforce and college ready. So that tie is not just in words only. I mean, I think the people that are on the industry side are probably very close to as passionate as the folks on the school improvement side. So, was there more you wanted to say, Judy?
No.
Okay. One thing, actually, just a follow-up question I have is, so what's an example of some client work you're doing on the organizational side?
One of the exciting things that we're doing on the organizational side is that we are setting up a consortium of vested groups to do a research to find out if there's any correlation between certifications and proficiency. So people who are certified, do they really perform faster? Are they get to proficiency better? And the other part of that is, what role does training play in preparing people for credentials? Right now, in the credentialing world, training, education, and credentialing are separate. They're not together.
Right.
So people who train you and people who certify you are not allowed to talk to each other. So that seems kind of silly, doesn't it? Why wouldn't we want those two to work together? And so some people are breaking ranks, and they're starting to collaborate. And so we've been asked to partner on a research study to say, hey, let's find out, does the people who integrate training and credentialing, do their people get to proficiency faster? Are they more competitive in the marketplace? Do their employers find them of greater value? So that's an exciting kind of broad-reaching particular piece that I'm pleased with.
That's great, because I think sometimes certification can become a buzzword. You know, I've worked on projects where they're developing certification programs, and, you know, we've developed great programs. So it's also a sales tool as well to say, you know, we have our people certified, so you mm-hmm. you know, you want to build like you were talking about, so it sustains and such. It really has meaning.
Unfortunately, some certifications are, did your check clear?
Right.
Okay, and that's not what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. What's exciting about what's going on the school side mm-hmm. is a certification we developed is actually, you must prove that what you did actually resulted in sustained results in the school system.
Right.
Not, so it's not a blip. So it didn't, like, 1 month you've got a good record. No. Mm-hmm. Were you able to sustain results for 3 years? That's student achievement, that's leadership in a lot of levels.
Great. So, Judy, you are referencing the CSIS, which is the Certified School Improvement Specialist that people can apply to be certified through ISPI. And that is analogous to the Certified Performance Technologist, the certification that Deb has, right? So, Deb, why don't you tell us a little bit more about the CSIS and also about the superintendent certification project that we're doing with TIFP?
Excuse me. Back a couple of years ago, I was hired by the Georgia Department of Education to do some success case studies. And what we were looking at is we were investigating and researching
schools that had been NI-9 schools, and that was when No Child Left Behind was in force. And an NI-9 school is a school that had not made adequate yearly progress in 8 to 9 years.
NI is for needs improvement.
Needs improvement.
Right?
Perennially underperforming schools. And what happens in those cases is people were assigned from the state to go into those schools, work with them on turnarounds, and in an NI-9 situation, they have the ability to recommend replacing personnel. So it's a fairly serious assignment.
Right.
And as I did the studies and I looked at the school turnarounds, I began to see real similarities in the practice of people that had been sent in that were successful. And as I had them in focus groups and interviews, they began looking at each other and said, well, you know, I do it that way too, but I'd never really said it out loud that that's the way I do it for the work to get be sticky and be sustainable after they leave. And so I went back to Judy and I said, you know, I think there's something here because what there is a new role that's evolved in education, which is called a school improvement specialist. They're people who are assigned by the state, by the State Department of Education, paid on federal funds or state funds. They're people who work at district offices who principals and other people are accountable to. Sometimes they're instructional coaches. And what had happened is that during No Child Left Behind and during, you know, this era of reform and change, and now with our new state accountability and national accountability systems, these individuals are still very important, and they are selected and assigned and sent in, but they had no performance standards. Mm. There was no consistency in any type of real training program, although the Georgia DOE does a good job in training people in their tools. But what we found is of all the people that we interviewed, only one had ever had any type of formal training in performance consulting.
Oh, interesting.
They were just sort of figuring it out themselves, and
right.
Some of them were doing it very well. And so we said, you know, there's not a professional home for these people. There's no organization that they go to like, say, a curriculum person or a principal or what have you, mm-hmm. or a school board member. And so we began thinking about the idea of how do we build a professional home? How can we build a certification for them and then later build some training and curriculum so that they have a place that supports them, meets their needs? And so as we began to do that, that's sort of how the Institute for Performance Improvement began to be born on behalf of serving them. And then Judy said, well, you know, let's do the same thing with people in other sectors, and then we have a way to cross-pollinate those groups. So that's how we got the group started. We came up with a certification, and it's unique in that you look, as Judy said, at 3 years of triangulated data, and you document what you've done in schools against the 10 standards. And what you're trying to show is that that causal linkage between what they did as a facilitator of school improvement and what happened in the schools and that it was sustainable after they left. So it's a new profession that needed a new type of support. And each year our nation and our state spends millions and millions of dollars on people that are paid to do this work that may or may not be proficient in it and may not be adequately supported in order to do the work. So that's how we sort of went after this. When we looked at the International Society of Performance Improvement, we saw all other sectors participating but K-12. And so we said, we've got to find a special way to make K-12 people feel like they have a professional home
right.
for focusing on improvement, but then gradually help them become more familiar with other organizations like the International Society for Performance Improvement, where people have been developing and applying their craft of performance improvement across all sectors for, you know, 50-something
right.
years.
Right.
So, Deb, I've heard you use the term professional home several times, and in fact, I'm on your email distribution list, and you sent out an email using that same phrase and inviting people to learn about TIFP. I'd like to hear a little bit about a little bit more about what you mean behind professional home. So I guess what I'm getting at is, can we expect what goes on at in the professional home of TIFP to be very similar to an organization like ISPI or ASTD, or does it go a little bit beyond what, you know, the traditional professional organizations that we're used to affiliating ourselves with?
That's a great question, because our goal is not to replace those organizations. Those are wonderful organizations. But all professional organizations across all sectors are going through some really challenging time in that because we now have so much access through the web to all sorts of information, and especially our younger colleagues, they're used to networking, you know, through social media, and they're the place-based version of going to a conference or something like that is sort of waning a bit because people are looking for relevance, especially if they're paying to be a member of that. And so Judy and I said, what if people instead were, when they join us as a member, are joining to get support for a project they're working on or coaching or to find like-minded colleagues, and it's more of a virtual organization where people can connect and do projects. And so as we've been doing this, we've been finding groups of people that wanted to work, say, on a superintendent certification, a way to recognize high-performing superintendents or indicate that, say, an associate superintendent has readiness to take on a superintendency because it's a very unique job, very different than any other job in the school system. It's not like a principal's job. We have another group that's really focusing in Tennessee, Georgia, and Texas on the issue of developing pathways for people to get to the principalship and making sure that they have the right type of developmental experiences, which Georgia has worked on quite a bit. So it's just a matter of finding projects that have meaning to people so that they're doing meaningful work, they're connected with people like them or that have ideas or resources. And most importantly, sometimes that they can reach out to people in other parts of the country and share those practices. Mm-hmm. So we like the idea of it being your professional home. And the way that people actually become affiliates with the Institute is by documenting their improvement projects they've worked on and sharing it back with the membership. And the membership does a peer review of their projects. And after that's completed, that sort of membership or the community of practice they're in grant them affiliate status rather than, say, GDI or a board or that type of thing. So we're looking for something that's a bit more dynamic than a professional association but still has good links with those professional associations.
Wow, how fantastic. I'm just sitting here with my mouth open. This is phenomenal.
Oh, can I just tell you, from years of working with Deb, she generates more ideas. We used to say, you know, she would go home and she would noodle on an idea, and oh boy, watch out on Monday when she came in, because she was ready to put it into action, and it's always a big vision. So I think this is an example of that. It's a very unique organization.
It is. Yeah. I mean, and like you said, I have two young kids, and I'm I feel like closely tied to it, like my children could benefit from this.
Well, and I think, although a lot of us maybe didn't stop and think about it, performance improvement in the schools is so closely related to performance improvement in any organization.
Right.
And yet so vital so that we have good people in the organizations. You know, that connection that Judy made is really on target. So, Judy, I wanted to ask you, what kind of people are you inviting to join you in TIFP? Is everyone invited, or what's going on with that?
That's a hard question. Right now, it is not an open call for membership. We are looking at having what we call levels of membership, and maybe an introductory level would be an open call. If you found out about us and you raised your hand, we would let you come in. But Deb referred to an affiliate member, and that is somebody who has proven ability of sustainable results. Okay, so that level of membership is because you've shown that you can do the work. Okay,
so even at entry level, you have to have some chops. Is that the entry level kind of anyone can join the organization?
No, that's what I'm saying. The entry level right now, we're not doing anything like broadcast. Please join us,
right?
Because we haven't figured out what would make them attractive? What could we offer them? What would we do? So we are really focused on that affiliate member, which is what Deb referred to. And these are people who have passion, they have capability, they have proficiency, and they're ready to come up and run. In other words, their developmental needs are very different. They're already fairly experienced people. And so we're debating that issue. And trying to figure out how we could, because we're starting to get emails, I'd like to join you. And I'm going, oh, that's great. Okay. I love you too, but I don't know that I want you to join. No, it's really.
We're not just going to cash their checks and say they're in.
There you go.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And because when you do that, there's an inferred obligation. Mm-hmm. When people send you a check, there is an inferred obligation. What are you going to do for them in return?
Right.
And so the question is, what could we do for them in return that would be somewhat value-adding? Mm-hmm. Because our intent was not to be another ASTD. Our intent was not to be another membership professional society.
Mm-hmm.
Our intent was to create a vehicle through communities of practice to drive this social mission, right, and to drive questions and work around workforce development. So we're getting some pushback. So you check in a year or not, maybe be able to answer the question better, but we're working on that.
Well, and from my experience, it's a very for lack of a better word, kind of a grassroots organization. All of those who are part of the inaugural group are helping you with those ideas and figuring out what are we going to offer, what kind of work are we going to do together, how will those kind of arrangements work out.
And, Jenny, it's really important to us to transfer what we know and have learned through our careers to people who are in the community of practice. For example, on the education side, I have a group of two stellar, recently retired superintendents who were very strong in school improvement, and a very, very strong principal and who's also done national coaching for other principals. And they're helping build our curriculum training program for school improvement specialists. Well, they've never been taught adult instructional design before, especially performance-based instructional design. So what they're getting from their membership is a new skill, and they're helping produce a product that will be something that the Institute can use, you know, to benefit other people, and they can help later deliver that training. So it's like people make an investment of their time, really more than their money, for those that choose to take that path. Now, we have some others who just want to come in from time to time and connect around a certain topic, or we reach out to them and say, you know, we have a project going on so-and-so, or how can we help you? And so it's just a matter of some people just staying in touch,
right,
and some people being deeply involved. Jenny is one person who is deeply involved in, she raised her hand and said she wanted to learn how to build evidence-based certifications, and who better than the top authority in the nation on certification. So, Jenny, tell us about what you and Judy are doing. It's very exciting.
Thank you.
You're a great example.
Thank you for that segue. I did want to talk about that. So, for instance, one of the benefits to me as one of the original members is I had an opportunity to reach out to Judy and say, I would really like to learn from your expertise in certifications, and could you mentor me through the process? It so happens that on the education side, we had a desire to build a certification for superintendents because, as Deb mentioned, it's a very unique role. And it's easy to have a surface level understanding of what that role entails that is not, you know, true to what it really entails. So, under Judy's tutelage and using her book as sort of my textbook, if you will, right now we're working on the research part of it. So I'm getting an opportunity to reach out to a number of superintendents and other interested parties across the country and ask them a set of standard questions that we're using to gather information about what makes a high-performing superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next step, I'll share what I've learned from Judy so far. The next step is we're going to use that raw data to compile a survey that will go out to a broader audience, and that will validate our initial findings. And from there, we're going to use that to identify what are the performance standards for the certification, build the tests that people would take to, or the could be a portfolio probably more likely, to demonstrate their proficiency. And Judy, you're nodding. You have much more to add than I know.
No, yet. we're talking about building an assessment process, and how would we have confidence that the person has demonstrated those competencies? So there's some interesting byproducts. Every time you do work like this, there's byproducts that come out of it. Like one are standards, and those standards can be adopted by any other group, and they can use them to develop curriculum. They can use them for hiring purposes.
Mm-hmm.
They can use them for promotional criteria. So that's a byproduct. Our path is toward the certification. So we're looking at the assessment piece.
Mm-hmm.
Now, TIFB may also say we want to get in the training field. So we may also have a group who says, now that we know what it's supposed to be, how then do we put together a curriculum? Or how do we partner with some major universities to do that? I mean, there's a lot of different ways.
Right.
And I must say, I really misspoke as a performance professional because I said there would be a test. And performance-based learning and certification is all about demonstrating proficiency, not marking the test. So let me correct myself and say there may be an assessment involved, but there will also be demonstration of performance and results in some sort of portfolio.
Right.
Well, one of our biggest challenges is that the in the world of certification, everyone identifies that with a multiple choice test. Mm-hmm. I mean, they go boom, boom, they go right to it. So they keep saying, when do I take the test? What day is the test offered? How do I, what book do I study?
Yeah, What do I need to know?
And we say, well, that's all wonderful, but that's not what we're doing.
Right.
We're asking for you to prove to us in the real world that what you've done is to those standards, sustainable, made a difference. And that's huge, huge. And right. they go, oh.
So, Judy and Deb, this would be a good time to talk about something else that's new on the marketplace that I think you are really introducing, particularly to the school improvement part of the world. Deb, tell us some exciting news from you and Judy recently.
Well, after getting the certification built, we had a lot of people who were saying, you know, I may not be ready to certify yet, but I'd like to increase my proficiency. And so we wrote a book. It's a School Improvement Specialist Field Guide. And it was from we took those original interviews that we had and used it to help us decide how we would then involve high-performing performance improvement practitioners, a number of them here in Georgia, into telling us more about their practice and writing a book around the standards. So it's said the School Improvement Specialist Field Guide from Corwin Press. It just came out at the end of November, and it is just chock full of all sorts of tools and techniques and advice, and our reviews have been very strong, and people say it's sort of like having a trusted coach whispering in your ear
right.
and sort of reminding you of what you do to facilitate improvement and make it stick. And we've drawn a lot from Judy's past work in the areas of sustainability, as well as how to it's less about the actual best practices of school improvement or, mm-hmm. say, best practices of literacy or those types of things, and more about how you go into an organization, analyze the current state, see how big the gap is between where the school is and where it could be, develop some hypotheses, and then begin to engage the leadership teams and the teachers and the people in the school to come together, to work together, to make those improvements in a way that they become part of the culture and that they're sustainable over time. And so the field book's out, and with Corin, they're a unique organization, a unique publisher, in that they allow us to put all of our tools out on their website that are in the book electronically. So
when you get the book,
you get a code and you get all those free, as well as a section of that website that's going to be, we're doing a call for papers and articles now for people who do school improvement work to come out and share some of their tips and techniques on our webpage with Corwin. So it's a good way to showcase the great work that people do, but also a way, if they need support, that they have a handbook there, and then our curriculum will be tied back to that handbook. Judy has had one of the best-selling books in the performance field, which is her field book, the performance consultant's field book that's
right.
been out there forever. So between Judy's work and other sectors and this special work in education, now we have two really good guidebooks for people who do performance improvement wherever they do it.
And this book, is it available on Amazon or just the...
At Amazon.com. You can also get it from Corwin's directly. And we also, out on our website, have a code that's out there where people can use that promotion code and get a 15% discount if they go to the Institute Performance Improvement, TIFPI.org.
You know, I would like to make an observation as a person from corporate that found my way into the school world through right. Deb. You know, when we started GLISSY, when Deb started GLISSY and kindly invited me to be a part of it, we were all about the blend between best practices from the corporate side and best practices from the school side.
Mm-hmm.
And Deb and I were the two industry voices, and everybody else there was from the school world, and many of them were what they call professional learning experts, which is similar to training and development
right.
experts on the corporate side. I went in with a bias that we were going to come and tell those educators all the cool progressive stuff there was to know from the corporate world. And I just want to put a shout out for those of you who are on the industry and the corporate side, you might well be interested in the CSIS book because, number one, the blend of the two brought together by Deb and Judy is going to be fantastic. But number two, what I found during my time working with professional learning professionals is that they also have some great techniques because, in fact, they are the thought leaders, I think, on this idea of community of practice or professional learning communities. Mm-hmm. That's not usually a technique or a strategy or an approach that's used on the corporate side. So we have a lot to learn from educators in terms of how to get teams of people that work together to also learn together. And even to, in the education side, it's called do action research together to see whether or not their changes are being effective, whether they need to recalibrate and try something new. So I encourage all of us not only to get Judy's book, the Performance Consultants Handbook, but also the new field guide. Even though it says it's for school improvement specialists, it's really for every kind of performance improvement specialist.
Right. And you said the different certifications or levels you're looking at, superintendent. What other roles are you looking at?
So we've got the school improvement specialist. Mm-hmm. That's already an available certification through ISPI.
Right.
And as far as I know, Deb and Judy, the superintendent certification is the only other project that's currently underway.
Right now that's underway in collaboration with the National Association for School Superintendents, which mm-hmm. is also a virtual organization that serves, supports, and recognizes school superintendents nationwide. And so, but we have been approached on several occasions with the idea of building a certification for individual school board members,
mm-hmm.
or maybe some type of assessment that would turn board behavior into data that could be public and actionable. Mm. And as we were talking about before the broadcast started,
right.
That is a level of education that sometimes people don't think about. And knowing these days how to be a good governance layperson mm-hmm. in a school setting that has become very, very complex, many requirements. Jenny, when I came into this, I had some ideas as a parent or having been a teacher, whatever. But once you sort of began to peel back the onion on issues related to schooling, everything from, funding to bullying to, instructional practices, you begin to realize that the role of the board really is advocacy, policy, and making sure that, that the budget is funded and wise decisions are made. And everything else really falls to that superintendent and their leadership team.
Mm-hmm.
In Georgia, our legislation now calls that a governance team. We have a superintendent working with the school board. But you can do everything possible as a school improvement specialist, but if you're not able to affect change, which usually a school improvement specialist doesn't work in that purview, a board that is not functioning properly can block the adoption of a lot of practices that really need to be put in place for all the kids, the good of all
right.
the kids in the
mm-hmm.
school. So we looked at that idea of maybe doing some type of badge type certification, but we keep going back to think that probably our best service to the common good would be working with some of our other national partners to be able to find a way to turn board behavior into data in a way that it is public and actionable way before something happens like a district potentially losing their accreditation over
right.
poor board performance.
And when you say board members, you're talking about the elected officials.
The elected mm-hmm. officials who they represent their constituents, but
right.
on the whole, as a governance team, they should represent every child in that district.
Exactly.
And it is really as we have more charter schools, we have
right.
charter boards, which usually are highly engaged. But there's a lot to learn about schooling, so we're trying to figure out how do we best serve our superintendents and how do we best serve our common good here for improving right. schools, because we. Nationally, we've all sort of taken a step back from school boards and says that's too mm-hmm. difficult of an issue to fix.
Mm-hmm.
But rather, like any other type of performance, our Judy's worked a lot with boards and boards of directors in other sectors, and we believe that perhaps by giving them performance data that they can measure themselves against. They self-assess, mm-hmm. and our Georgia School Board Association does a really good job helping with that type of thing, but it's maybe helping them maybe have some type of external assessment or way to look at their work that's public mm-hmm. that could inform their own development and growth.
Right.
Yeah. Judy, I want to turn back to you and talk to a little bit more about what's going on the industry side. Tell me, how are people reacting to TIFP, both people who might be interested in following our progress or might be interested in joining as members in the future, and also organizations that are putting out RFPs and might be interested in having people from the organization work on those projects?
Oh, that was a complex question. Let's go in chunks and pieces. First of all, let's talk about some corporations. Corporations are, I'll be talking with a couple of them in just a couple of weeks. They're monitoring us. They like to be, they're tracking what we're doing because they have, in fact, brought manufacturing back to the United States. And they have opened a plant or they're about to open a plant. And they're having a great deal of difficulty hiring people who are graduated from the U.S. system who are competent in basic math and reading. So they're tracking this very, very closely. So I'm meeting with them to talk about how they can, one, do they become an organizational member, knowing their funds will come in to support some of that work? Or do they just want to keep watching from the side and hope we'll have miracles that will happen? So and what role do they want to play? So we do have organizational groups that way. But we're also having some RFPs come in. And right now, one of those RFPs has to do with healthcare, our whole healthcare system. And now it's an RFP, and we're responding. We don't have the work, but at least somebody found us, and at least somebody's asking. So we're in the process of preparing a response about how we might be able to support performance improvement and evaluation effectiveness of our healthcare system. Mm-hmm. Now, my community of practice, our members, those affiliate members, that would be a huge opportunity for them to be able to work in that area.
Right.
We also have another RFP on an international scene for how we can bring performance improvement to developing countries. So we're in the process of, again, crafting a response about how our community of practice might be able to respond to that.
So if one day I'm not able to be here, maybe it's because I'm in Uganda. And I work on that. So I want to respond to two of those things. Number one, I would like to do sort of a coming attractions for the radio show. One of the guests I'd like to have on, and it would probably be a group of guests like we have today,
right,
are from the healthcare world. Because one thing I've noticed as a consumer, really, as well as a performance improvement specialist, is that hospitals do a lot of performance improvement work. And in fact, the regulations they're under now require it. They have to demonstrate high levels of service.
Right.
So, you know, you can walk through the halls of hospitals and see balanced scorecards on every floor and everybody understands the lingo. And I've got to tell you, that's not yet the case in corporate industry. So no. I'm intrigued by that. So want to have those folks on the show. Hopefully we'll do that within the next quarter.
Great.
And the second thing, Judy, you mentioned the international RFP. There's something interesting about that because they have a very specific requirement that TIFP might be uniquely qualified to satisfy?
Well, they have a requirement that you have to be certified in performance.
CPT.
You have to have a CPT. So they have found that in the past, when they have funded work, the work that was sustainable, there was always a CPT on the team. They figured that out. So they're now requiring that you be a certified performance technologist. You have to have a CPT on your key team in a key position for actually to go after that. Yes.
So not necessarily everybody on the team, but the leadership of the team.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what are some next steps for TIFP? What's in the hopper right now?
We just had a meeting. Deb and I just met before we came here, and we were outlining our plan for the next 3 months, 6 months, et cetera. And we have a number of things. One has to do with our own infrastructure. Please understand, we're a startup. We're brand new.
Mm-hmm.
We're two bright ladies sitting over here with some wonderful community practice members. So we have some infrastructure. One is we are going to upgrade our website. We're going to create a new website for school improvement specialists, which is unique to them. We're doing things like getting ourselves officially registered with the federal government. So we have infrastructure pieces.
Right.
The other piece is we actually have a core set of products that we can now offer, but we don't have a vehicle to get that word out. So the website comes up, gives us an opportunity for people to see it, they can register, buy, and whatever. So that's how that all fits together. And then, of course, we have projects under development. Mm-hmm. And we have members who, like Jenny, who are helping create that. So we've actually, I think, in terms of maturation, our next step really is called getting our infrastructure in place to support our vision and dream.
Now, Judy, would it be important to say that we are open for business while we're under construction?
Oh, it's absolutely it's appropriate to say we're open for business. If whether you're on the corporate side and you look to maybe you want to know something about sustainability of initiatives, we actually have a workshop. We can train your people in doing that. If you are a school system and you want somebody to help on the school improvement, we have training, we have coaching, we have techs, we have that material for you, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we are open for business for both the corporate and for the school side.
And on the corporate side, I can tell you there's a breadth of experience in the community of practice we have, even as small as it is. Strong change managers, strong facilitators, strong training and developers. So lots of resources there, and we can put together a team to do all sorts of projects within the performance improvement world.
And one of our courses is, I think, is very valuable for anyone who either is making the transition into being an independent consultant or is working inside an organization, but particularly with Judy having years and years of having run a successful performance improvement organization. We have a three-part class. We do it live or we do it virtually, but it really is an introduction to doing human performance improvement consulting. And which is really two roles. It's a role of being an expert in your field, mm-hmm. as well as how you actually facilitate that.
Yes.
But the sort of third rail there is where Judy does a lot of work with our participants in how do you set up and run your own consultancy? What are the pitfalls? What are the things that make you strongest? And she has so much knowledge of how to work successfully with clients, what do you do in certain types of situations, that it we're really hoping that people will take that class and then connect through our community of practice as appropriate to their sector, because it really puts people, especially people who may be new early in their careers and they're mm-hmm. working toward that long term, it gives them a way to work with one of the best of the best to learn that in a way that then they can go back and apply that in whichever way that they want to. A lot of our people in the education sectors are people who were transitioning from having been practitioners to being independent consultants. So it's probably one of the most exciting parts of our work is getting to see them really bloom and blossom and do well and grow their own businesses.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to add to that a little bit. If you are inside a corporation and you want to do work in performance improvement, a lot of those principles apply to you. Mm-hmm. You have to be very clear on your products, but you have to be clear on your differentiators. You have to be able to speak and align. So I've done this with some corporations,
right,
who are saying, you know, nobody pays attention to us, and we're just a cost line, and they're going to cut us out. Well, they have to operate as a business within a business.
Right.
So the principles we're talking about as being an independent consultant, a lot of that transfers to being an internal consultant. So we're getting some anyway, yes, we have some proven practices and tools and techniques to help you make the transition, whatever it is.
But I fully agree with you. Yeah. You know, and I'm sure Jenny too, having been in the corporate world, it's like you're a consultant.
Internal consultant.
Right, exactly.
Well, and many people, sadly enough, maybe not as much now as in the past few years, a lot of people who have been internal have been transitioned out, mm-hmm. maybe not of their own will.
Right.
And so there are a lot of people interested in continuing their career on an independent basis. And I wanted to observe that Hale & Associates is a great example of a scalable company. So when Judy provides you this information, it's appropriate for you whether you're thinking of opening a bona fide organization that has employees doing the work with
yes.
you, or whether you're interested in being an independent consultant and staffing up with contractors as needed. So no matter what your interest, I think that would be a really valuable course.
Well, it does also tie, actually, in a few weeks, we're going to have a guest. We're talking about how the workforce is changing, where they may not hire people as full-time employees because they have to pay the benefits and such, that more and more companies are moving to just bring in people as they need them.
And educators are unique in that, relative to us corporate people. They retire relatively young because they have stayed in one profession and they can retire after 25 or 30 years. So there are many people that I know that are in their early 50s that are retired and they don't really, they can draw their retirement, but they don't want to, sit on their hands.
Right.
And so a lot of those people get redeployed as school improvement specialists, but they go straight from being a superintendent or a principal or whatever into that role where before they were very strong in what they did and they had power of position to make it happen. Now the idea of being a consultant, often when you have limited control over what's going on and just the way, and they may have a limited time span to get the work done, maybe just a year when really school improvement generally takes 3 to 5 years. And so we saw that as a real opportunity that you have these people who were so stellar and really know the best practices and are good at working with people, but then they're just sort of thrown out there on their own. And we said, well, if we can give them a professional home, we have a place where we can, support them and grow them and they can connect, but at the same time, they can build their own businesses.
Right.
So, Lori, we're coming up on the end of our time here.
I know.
Do you have any questions for Deb and Judy that we haven't?
No, I just got to say hats off to you. I am, like I said, as a parent, I'm like just thrilled that this kind of stuff is happening. And in my own head, at my son's school, I'm like, ooh, I want to start. We'll be talking. So, thank you so much.
Well, I want to make sure we tell people how to get in touch with the organization again. So tell us how we can check in if we have questions or want to be a part of things.
Well, you can easily just go to judy@tifby.org. That's J-U-D-Y at T-I-F as in Frank, P-I.org. Okay. You can also go to the Institute for Performance Improvement.org and do some searches that way. But Judy's a pretty easy one.
And the other easy one would be?
Deb. D-E-B at T-I-F-B-I.org.
Okay, great.
Great. And, well, like always, we will be posting this on our radio show website with their bios and information if you want to use that as a follow-up. But also I'm excited to announce working on getting all these podcasts on iTunes as well.
Excellent.
So should
Excellent.
Have that in the next couple weeks. So, great. Well, thank you so much, ladies. Jenny, great job again. You're just fantastic. And we will talk to you all next week.
Thank you.
Today's show has been brought to you by The Performance Difference, dedicated to helping you achieve your business goals through employee growth. To learn more, please visit theperformancedifference.com.